and Bradley Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Please be seated.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Nebraska Court of Appeals. This is our second day in session for the September panel. Typically, we sit in panels of three judges. There are six judges on the Court of Appeals. Every now and then, a situation arises where a judge needs to participate by brief. So that is what we have for this afternoon's session. We had three judges this morning. For this afternoon's sessions, the cases that we are deciding today will be decided by Judge Arterburn, who is from Papillion on my left, and by Judge Rico Bishop, who is from Lincoln, and she will participate solely on the briefs. I am Francie Reedman, and I am from Gretna. We're thrilled to be here. Coming out and doing this community outreach is one of our favorite parts of our job because it allows us not only to show you all what we do with live arguments, these are real cases, they're representing real people who have real disputes. So we enjoy the opportunity to let you see how our process works. But we also enjoy the opportunity for what comes afterwards, and that's the Q&A that we have with you all. So I hope that you all have some questions for us when we get finished with this. We won't be able to discuss the cases themselves, but certainly we can discuss the process and any other questions that you might have. Just as a little bit of background for you all, these cases have all been tried. There's been a decision by the trial court, and now one of the parties is unhappy with the decision that they received. They believe that there was an error created by the trial court that they would like us to correct. Each side is only allowed 10 minutes to present their case, but they have provided us with briefs setting forth all of their arguments before this, which we have studied, and we also have a copy of what transpired in the trial court, a transcript of the proceedings and the pleadings that the parties have requested that we take a look at. So we've done all of that beforehand, so it's not solely the 10 minutes that they get to present to us for us to learn about their case, but rather all of the other information that has previously been provided. So with that, we have three cases that we will be hearing this afternoon. So the first case is In Re Estate of Sherman. If counsel wants to, they can move to their respective tables. And the appellant is welcome to begin your argument whenever you are ready. This is In Re Estate of Sherman.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. May it please the court, Mr. Calkins, Mr. Brostrom. My name is Brad Holbrook, and I represent Michael Sherman, the son of the decedent Victor Sherman, the appellant and interested party herein. This case comes before the Court of Appeals relating to an order directing that Mr. Sherman regurgitate about $160,000 of rental income on real estate that he either alleged that he owned as a life tenant and or was deeded to him during the pendency of Mr. Sherman's estate. By motion raised by interveners, Christine Harris and her brother Jeffrey Harris as successor trustees of their mother Christine Sherman's trust.
Mr. Holbrook, I'm going to ask, I'm not sure if people can hear you in the back, so if you can stay a little closer to that microphone.
I apologize.
There we go.
I hate podiums, but I will do my best to stick behind it.
All right, thank you.
It's our contention that there's three issues here. The first, and is likely to be dispositive, is whether or not the trial court erred in failing to find that the interveners, Ms. Harris and Mr. Harris, again, the children of Christine Sherman, who was my client's stepmother, lacked standing to even file the motion to request the relief that was ultimately tried. When neither one of those individuals was ever appointed as a personal representative, and neither one of those individuals was ever appointed as a special administrator. The second issue relates to whether or not the trial court erred in requiring Mr. Sherman to regurgitate the income when, had the personal representative brought this action, pursuant to Nebraska Probate Code, the personal representative would have been barred from doing so. The third issue is, assuming that the trial court did not err on either of the first two issues, the trial court still erred in ordering Mr. Sherman to return $160,000 of income generated on real estate that he incurred expense to gain that income. It's our contention that the trial court erred on all three fronts. This case emanated from Mr. Sherman passing in April of 2012. We're now 2021, 9 years. It's been a long go. Although there's a lot of facts that have occurred in the last 9 years, I think there's just very limited facts that this court needs to address or think about in terms of the issues that have been raised on appeal. Mr. Sherman, again, he died in April of 2012. His wife at the time, Christine Sherman, filed for probate, I think, the month thereafter. Leland Potter was appointed the initial PR. He resigned because of a conflict. Mr. Liske was appointed in August of 2013. So now we have an estate going on for about a year and a half. Many issues have been filed and litigated in the last 9 years. During the vast majority of that, though, my client had filed a motion to remove Mr. Liske as personal representative because of allegations of misfeasance, malfeasance, etc. A lot of those issues were tried both in the probate court and in the district court relating to some of these issues that were the basis of the request of Mr. Liske to be removed as personal representative. Nonetheless, those facts aren't necessarily relevant to this decision. I just want to give the court some history as to what happened and when it happened. In March of 18, though, Mr. Liske, by stipulation of the parties, resigns as personal representative, takes on the cloak of a special administrator purely for limited purposes of taking care of some Coffeyville oil interest, income and expense, and taking care of estate tax returns, okay? That's the only power he has left. We have no PR. In March, May of 2015, so between the time Mr. Sherman filed the motion to have Mr. Liske removed and before Mr. Liske resigned as PR, Mr. Liske issues deeds to both Mike Sherman and Christine Sherman as part of the estate. Those were effectively the last substantive assets of this estate. Up to that point in time, Mike Sherman, on the real estate that he received in May of 2015, had always been receiving the income off of that real estate. It was 9 quarters. The real estate Ms. Sherman had received, which was different real estate, the estate had always been receiving that income. Everybody knew that, including the personal representative. While some of these other issues are being litigated in the district court, Christine Sherman dies August of 2018. We finally get decisions in December of 18 relating to these other issues. The interveners file a complaint to intervene in January of 19, saying, hey, we need to come into the estate to assert our mother's rights as successor co-trustees. We object because in their complaint, they allege that Mr. Sherman, my client, is liable for their fees. Mr. Sherman is liable for the PR and the PR's attorney's fees. And Mr. Sherman should regurgitate any income he received on the real estate prior to that being distributed to him in May of 2015. Those were the issues as raised by the motion or the complaint of the interveners. We objected basically on the basis that, what basis do you have to request that? What statutory or any legal basis do you have to request that we pay your fees or that we pay the PR of the estate's fees?
Did you specifically raise the standing issue that you're raising now?
Yes, we certainly did. So the objection to the complaint was overruled. They filed the motion of interveners on May 31st, 2019. We subsequently, I believe in June of 19, had a progression hearing. At that progression hearing, which is in the Bill of Exceptions, I specifically told the trial court, they do not have standing. They are not the personal representative.
So if Christine had not passed away, is your position the same? Christine would not have been able to raise these issues as well?
Correct. She's not the personal representative. Hedke made this issue very, very clear, and that case was decided, I believe, in 2012, where we had a similar issue. No personal representative existed. The sister sued the brother because of real estate that mom deeded into a trust prior to her death, and brother deeded out of the trust after her death, and the sister sued on undue influence, a litany of other issues. It was tried, and the trial court, I believe it was Judge Urbom, found that there was undue influence, made multiple findings. They came up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, hey, guess what, sister? You're not the PR. You don't have the right to come into the court and say, pull that real estate back.
So in the absence of a PR, how would these issues get before the court?
Well, as Hebke noted, and as the Nebraska probate code notes, a special administrator can be appointed by anybody at any time in a situation when the personal representative either cannot act or will not act. And Hebke case said, this is exactly what we're talking about. And they referenced the statute as it relates to special administrators to say, this is a situation, there was no PR, so a PR could not act. In this case, March of 18, we no longer have a PR because he resigned. We have a special administrator, but nobody at any point in time, including the special administrator, Mr. Liske, including the interveners, ever once motioned the court say, court, we have this issue, I need a PR appointed, and if you won't appoint a PR, appoint a special administrator to go after Mr. Sherman on these issues. That never happened.
So my understanding is one of the things that the interveners, one of some relief that they were looking for from the court was not to have money taken from the estate to pay the PR's fees and his attorney fees, right? Was that one of their things they were looking for?
I don't know that they specifically stated that, but the context of their motion was we have an insolvent estate, we have a PR that's not been paid, PR's attorney's not been paid, can't close the estate. And so ultimately, I see this as a workaround. The PR knows that it can't file this action because it would be time barred. The statute specifically states that in any distribution, you're time barred within 3 years of death or 1 year of the distribution. Mr. Liske distributed this out in May of 15. He knew he couldn't come after Mr. Sherman. So I think, and make no mistake, these parties were aligned. They've been aligned ever since Mr. Sherman passed away. All you have to do is look at the transcript. And this was nothing more than a ploy to circumvent that occurring. So that's the context. Their motion states, Mr. Sherman received rent. My rent was used to administer the estate. I should have an accounting of how my money was used. That's not the same thing as saying, pull that money back in the estate for me. That's not the same thing. Effectively it is, but that's not what they asked. I think that's what they wanted, but again, if you look at their motion, that's not what they asked. I see I'm in the amber. I'd like to reserve the remaining time I have. Thank you.
You may. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Since there's two appellees, we're going to request that I'm going to take 7 minutes and Mr. Calkins will take 3 minutes.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Brostrom of the law firm of Lordson, Brownell, and Brostrom in Grand Island, Nebraska, and I appear on behalf of Jeffrey Harris and Patricia Harris, the co-trustees of the Christine Sherman Revocable Trust. This case deals with a motion to intervene by the appellees, which are Patricia Harris and Jeffrey Harris, Christine Sherman's son and daughter, who were the co-trustees of her revocable living trust after her death in the summer of 2018. This case deals with the inequities and the disparate treatment of the parties, one being Michael Sherman, the appellant, the surviving son of the deceased, and the appellee, Christine Sherman, prior to her death, and now the co-trustees representing her interest. The inequities were a result of the actions of the successive personal representative, Mr. Liske. The inequities are that the successive personal representative retained the incomes from two separate parcels of land that Mrs. Sherman, Christine, received in a deed of distribution in June of 2015, because they were devised to her in the will. However, one of those parcels was what's called the Wilcox Farm, had already been deeded to her prior to death. So Mr. Liske not alone took the proceeds and the rental income from the one parcel that she was granted in the deed of distribution and by the will, he also took one that she already owned and took those proceeds. So nevertheless, the Wilcox Farm net income was retained by the successor personal representative to pay.
So is your position that the PR used funds that didn't belong to them?
Well.
Didn't belong to the estate?
Right, didn't belong to the estate. They were utilized on just one of the parcels of land, the Wilcox Farm.
So is that not a claim against the PR?
Well, it could be, but it basically was used for the administrative fees that were incurred by, primarily were caused by Mr. Sherman, who basically objected to almost everything in the particular probate proceeding. He's objected to the inventories, he's objected to the personal representative, he's filed a motion to remove the personal representative, that sort of thing. So basically, and then during the same time frame from when the date of death, which is April 23rd of 2012, until he received a deed of distribution by Mr. Liske on May of 2015, he kept all of that income. He had an undivided one-half interest in nine parcels of land, nine quarters of land, which is quite a large amount of land. So he retained those. So basically, the probate case started in May 1st of 2012, and as I stated, Mr. Sherman has basically objected to almost everything that's happened in the probate because it didn't go according to his wishes. My client, in addition to having her income from those two parcels used by the personal representative, successor personal representative, she also, at time of trial, it was that she also used about $83,000 of her own money out of her pocket to defend herself in various lawsuits filed by Mr. Sherman. And those lawsuits were integral in actually resolving the issues in the estate because those were listed in the motion to remove the personal representative. There was a certificate of deposit case which was tried in Adams County District Court. I tried that case for 2 days and we received, it was basically dismissed.
Would there have been an option in those district court cases to request attorney fees?
We did ask for attorney fees in the certificate of deposit case, and they were not granted at that time.
So then you sought to have them collected through the probate court?
That is correct.
What jurisdiction does the probate court have to award damages from a district court?
It was our position that we basically resolved most of the issues for the personal representative by those lawsuits. So we felt that the proper forum to address those equitable issues would have been with the county court, the probate court. So basically, she had out-of-pocket funds as well as the funds from the two parcels that were used for all these administrative fees to fight, basically, Mr. Sherman. There was the CD case in district court. There was also, filed a will contest that was then transferred to the district court of Adams County. He dismissed that after extensive discovery, which Mrs. Sherman was also involved. I was involved on her behalf. And then basically there was a case where he alleged that there was a note owed to the estate that was basically dismissed because of a motion for summary judgment, which I filed in the district court of Adams County.
Mr. Brostrom, I'd like to kind of cut to the chase, and that is the standing argument that is being made by the appellant, and maybe that's what Mr. Calkins is playing for, I don't know. But what is your response to the issue of whether your client has standing?
Well, first of all, the standing statutes comes with, there is no intervention statute in the probate code, Chapter 30 of the Nebraska statutes. It has to go to the regular intervention statute. That intervention statute we followed when we intervened, and it basically says once you show that you have a direct interest and you know, go through all the steps, then you have you can basically, the statute provides that you can intervene and then you can prosecute any action. So therefore, we believe that that statute gives us standing by the intervention itself.
But doesn't the probate code limit the person who can make recovery on behalf of the estate to the personal representative? Isn't that what In Re Interest of Hedke says?
Well, it does say that, and there is the Hedke provision or the Hedke case that deals with that, that says that there could be an exception. It's never been recognized by the Nebraska court, but we're thinking that this is a case that is, because this is to resolve the inequities that my client, Christine Sherman, and subsequently the co-trustees, are seeking to basically get an accounting, which is basically an equitable action. And so therefore, by there was, you know, we believe that because there was no error alleged by Mr. Sherman in allowing the intervention, we automatically have standing according to that. If not, we would ask the court to consider this as an exception because of the equitable nature of the claim. She's asking for an accounting, really, is what she's asking for, or what the co-trustees are asking for in the intervention. It's interesting to note that the trial court, the probate court, basically said, the courts are, county courts are without general equity jurisdiction, but in exercising that original jurisdiction, they may apply equitable principles to matters within probate jurisdiction, citing the case of In re Jurgsmeyer's estate, which is stated in our brief. We believe that that's what the court did. It's basically an equitable action, and believes that he has the right to do that. And so we believe that the county court was correct in its ruling. Also, the court noted that at the pretrial before this case, that basically he was going to be looking at other issues, unresolved issues, because there were so many issues pending over this long period of time in this particular instance. Also, there's the argument that situation with the personal representative, it should have been, we allege, that it should have been because of the, basically the PR is, if you object to that, it's based on the capacity. And they did not allege the capacity in any way, shape, or form. So we believe that they waived that by some of the case law that I provided in my brief. So therefore, we believe that all these inequities could be taken care of in an accounting. There was no PR to do this. There was no special administrator that had the powers to do this at that point in time.
Didn't the stipulation that the parties entered into provide that either party could request that a special administrator be later appointed?
I don't think it addressed that issue. It just basically addressed that Mr. Liskey had the powers to deal with the Coffeyville oil interests, and basically that was it. He was limited in those powers. Therefore, that's basically the long and short of the intervention and the standing issue.
Thank you.